RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
And Kit is with us now. Hi, Kit, how are you?
Morning, Paul. Great to be back. I'm fine, thanks.
Plenty of juicy topics that you've been into in the Off Guardian, and I want to pick through a few, if that's all right.
Yeah, of course. That's what I'm here for.
Okay, that's what you're here for every month. Okay, this connects with what's happening here. Genetic engineering and the global push for deregulation, top story on Off Guardian right now. That's exactly what is happening here. That's part of a global push, is it?
Oh, absolutely. And it has been for a couple of years. It's really a question of semantics, to be honest. There was this new technology that they started talking about a couple of years ago, which is gene editing as opposed to genetic modification.
Hmm.
With the difference being that gene-edited organisms, animals or plants, are supposedly just have their genes like snipped and reshuffled. But a genetically modified organism would have genetic material added from an exterior source. As such, the pushers of GM are saying that the genetically edited are separate from genetically modified and therefore not subject to the same regulation. And this is happening all over the world. Already happened in America, already happened here in the UK. They're changing the rules in the EU. And as you pointed out, they just changed the rules in Australia and New Zealand as well. So there's a new strain of genetic edited products that are separate from genetically modified that won't be subject to labeling laws. So they won't have to label necessarily.
Yep.
They won't be... But they will be, and this is very important, they are still subject to potential patent claims and copyright. So it will be possible for the big biotech firms to copyright seeds and genetic material, which means that if you grow your own without their permission, they could see copyright infringement.
And that's what it's all about, right? That's what it's all about.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the fun. That's the full stop in it. It's about just a handful of global biotech and agricultural firms having control over seeds and seed supply, essentially. That's what it will come down to in the end.
Gosh, they don't give up, do they?
No.
Hmm.
I don't think that. I don't think it's like that. I think it's like saying earthworms don't give up burrowing through the earth. They can't do anything else at this point. It's a system in place of agencies, institutions that know only this and how to do this. It's like sharks. They can't keep still. They just have to keep going.
Yeah, but this is the food chain. Our politicians here are singing the praises like they know what they're talking about. So someone's persuaded them.
Oh, absolutely. And they'll have persuaded them with... So in some cases, it will be as simple as money. Some of them will probably have relatives on the boards of, Bayer or Monsanto or whoever. Some of them will be told that genetically edited crops are going to be better for the environment. That's going to be a big one. They're going to, they take less fuel to farm or something like that. Some made up rubbish for some study that has a statistic that somebody else made up in a different study about, genetically edited corn only needing 17% of the carbon that's genetic than normal corn does or something like that.
Yeah. Or the cattle's big here, methane.
Oh, yeah. Well, they were working on that. It's I believe it's mentioned in the article. They're working on a genetically edited cow that doesn't produce as much methane, if you can believe that. I don't know how. I don't know exactly what they would do. They're talking about changing its gut biome or something.
Yeah, gene editing is genetic modification. We've had a very eminent geneticist, microbiologist on here. He's he heads up one of the Canterbury University departments involved in this. And there is already history of errors being made in gene editing, which have had, consequences along the lines of the other genetic modification. So there's really no difference in the end, it seems. It's just a new sales job, right? This is what it is.
You have to think so. I mean, I don't know enough about the actual science of genetic engineering to say that they are absolutely definitely exactly the same, but I do know enough about political doublespeak to spot a massive loophole when I see one, and that is a massive loophole. If you can just say, oh, it's not genetically modified, it's gene edited, which has got quite a vague definition in English law, and I don't know what the definitions are in other places, but I'm willing to bet they're almost word for word the same. It is perfectly possible that it's simply a rebranding to get stuff through regulation. I mean, it could easily happen.
And sell it to the public.
Absolutely. Mm.
All right. Moving on. What do you make of the Brazil X crackdown?
Well, the whole free speech issue at the moment is quite interesting. It's another of those multinational issues which has like slightly different formats depending where you are, slightly different points of discussion or anywhere in the world. But the free speech issue itself is everywhere at the moment.
Mm. Is it connected with what's been happening in Europe?
I think so.
With what is happening in the UK, your own version?
It's absolutely connected with the UK one because it's both Twitter and Musk-centric in that regard. I mean, in Europe, they had the arrest of Telegram guy. What's his name?
Durov. Yeah, Pavlov Durov, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so the walls are closing in for social media, are they?
Well, sort of. There's a few facets to that. You also had, and this is one of the more quietly done bit, Mark Zuckerberg came forward and said that in 2020, the Biden administration, during COVID rather, not just 2020, pressured Facebook to police COVID and vaccine talk, which of course they did. Everybody knew that. But now he's saying, oh, we probably shouldn't have done it. And I don't think we would do it again next time. So while there is a certain amount of definite crackdown on free speech, and there always has been, and in the Pavel Durov case, for example, is trying to turn Telegram from a social media platform into a publisher. Now, this is a very important question in law. This is something social media platforms have always been immune to. They're not publishers. They are simply platforms. A publisher, like a newspaper or a publishing house, bears some responsibility for what it publishes. If a newspaper published an article saying X happened and it was a complete lie, which it does all the time, obviously, but in specific states, like calling somebody a murderer or a rapist or something, they can get sued as the publisher and supplier of the space for that incorrect information. Social media is different. Social media is not responsible for what is published on its platform, ever. It's always been the exception. And governments all over the world have been desperately trying to change that. That is a big thing they want to change. Because if you make Facebook or Twitter or Telegram responsible for everything anybody says on it, they will have to censor people. They will have to. They won't, even if they don't want to, they will have to. Because otherwise they are opening themselves up for massive lawsuits, just hundreds of them, maybe thousands.
Yeah.
So that's some... It would be good for governments to do that, but it would be sort of good for the platforms to do it because they would be forced by law to censor, you see. So it wouldn't be their fault anymore. You couldn't complain to Twitter or Facebook for doing the censoring. The government would have essentially forced them to through making it possible to sue them without actually forcing them to. So the government wouldn't actually be censoring anybody. So they can't be blamed. And the social media companies would feel the need to censor people to protect their own bottom line. So they couldn't really be blamed. It would be a censorship-like cooperation in which nobody is really to blame. And it's not officially done as part of a law on free speech. It would be quite a clever way of doing it. And it's why the reason...
Sidestepping. Yeah.
Exactly. And they've been trying to push that through for a while. I think Telegram might be the first one to take that forward because Telegram is more fringe than the others and has been associated with Russia and kiddie porn and stuff to make it all right. Going to Brazil, and indeed here, where you have Elon Musk taking on governments and stuff, that sort of ties in with the Mark Zuckerberg situation where he says, we censored COVID information, but we wouldn't do it next time. It is a sort of rehabilitation of social media because they did all do that. Like across the board, the social media companies were in step on COVID and they censored everybody. They were told to censor, including Off-Guardian, as it happened.
Really?
Oh, yeah. We had a massive warning put on all of our links on Twitter for years that if you clicked it, it said, be aware of this site. It might be trying to steal your information or it might be publishing stuff we don't like. We're not going to tell you which.
Boy. What about users, though, Kid? What do you think? I mean, if someone cut X off, particularly X here for me, I'd be bloody furious, man. And if you've got armies of people feeling that way, is there any pushback that is meaningful, do you think?
Well, I don't, I don't think they would cut it off.
Yeah, well, how would you know, right, is the point you're making.
Yeah, oh, I mean, I think they already, in some ways, they put people in boxes and limit their reach. They definitely do that. I don't know. It's an interesting question because they don't want people to leave. Like the part of the rejigging of social media at the moment is that the original plan, this was a few years ago, pre-COVID, is that they would simply ban people. And as a result, and you know, the classic line is, well, if you don't like it, you can start up your own bank, you can start up your own social media network and stuff. It used to be said all the time. But the problem with that is that's what people did. And so you had YouTube would ban people, and that spurred like four or five different video sharing platforms. There was Odyssey, Rumble, BitChute, YouTube, that kind of thing, that are basically just YouTube without the censorship. But when you take a step back as the people in charge, the people running YouTube, the people running governments and everything, that's actually not a productive way of controlling the conversation. Or if you say to people, go and start your own platform, and they do that, you no longer have control over what they say.
So you keep people corralled into the already established.
You keep people corralled on your platform because you've invested money in it. The government's invested money in it so they can use spy software on it. We know they do that. And you don't want them going off and starting their own where you don't know what they're saying. So that's another aspect of the, I should have touched on this when I first mentioned, that's another aspect of making platforms responsible.
Yeah.
Because it will result mean payoffs and lawsuits. But YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, forward payoffs and lawsuits, newly started up companies won't have the money to keep up. They will simply have to shut down, or they'll have to censor. It will be that or that. The giants can survive that, but the minnows can't, which is another reason it's quite a clever thing to do.
I think in the EU, is it that there's a threshold as to your status? So what is it, 48 million users or something like that? But that bar will lower all the time, won't it?
Absolutely. They'll lower it as they need to. Or they'll redefine what users are and say that anybody that might see it is a user or something like that. I mean, the legal language is always being cheated. They will just cheat it and cheat it and cheat it until they get the result they want.
Yeah. Okay, here's another thing that's interesting from my point of view, but I'm sure our listeners, because we've heard this news. It's another story on Off Guardian, and that is the Gaza polio vaccination campaign.
Oh, yeah.
What are they doing there?
It is strange. It is very strange to agree. I mean, if you can agree ceasefire windows, you know, I'll address the story at first.
Yeah, please.
They found polio in the water and routine testing of the Gaza water system back in July. And the WHO warned about the possible outbreak of polio. And then in early August, they found a polio case, or maybe it wasn't early, it might have been, it was a couple of weeks ago. There was the first polio case in Gaza for 25 years. It was a little kid, apparently. And this meant the WHO making statements about the fact we need to start vaccinating again. And then Hamas and Israel agreed and set up pauses in the conflict starting a few days ago and carrying on for a few more days, where they're going to certain areas are off limits for fighting while the WHO goes in and vaccinates. So far, like 170,000 children. Their aim is to vaccinate all 640,000 children. But this is, I mean, it's just a bit strange.
Yeah, it feels strange. And, how many of those children then get blown to pieces?
Exactly, or starve, or die of malnutrition or anything like that. I mean, obviously, Israel doesn't have concern for these children. You could be argued that Hamas doesn't either, considering their role in starting it. So, like, what? What's the point? And I think, honestly, it's a question of messaging. Like, vaccines are really, really important. Vaccines are more important than war. Vaccines are more important than electricity. Vaccines are more important than making sense. Everybody needs to be vaccinated, even if you then set them on fire and throw them into the sea.
And also, one thing that we became aware of, and we know through the international health regulations and reporting on that, is that it usually starts with testing in the water or the wastewater. That's where they find things.
Yeah.
And you're always going to find something there, right?
Yes. Especially in a war zone in which the water is exposed to God knows what. I mean,
Yeah, it's something fishy about that.
And this is all, it's almost close to one case as well. It just seems, it's just a very strange reaction. I mean, if you can have a ceasefire because you don't want kids to die of polio, you can have a ceasefire because you don't want kids to die of bombs dropping on.
Exactly.
And the converse is true. If your bombing campaign is really tactically important, so tactically important, it doesn't really matter how many people it blows up who aren't involved, then your bombing campaign is too tactically important to stop it so you can vaccinate the people. Whichever side you argue it from, it doesn't make any sense, really.
No, I can't make any sense of it. Here's another interesting one, too, for our audience. And Putin calling for the full-scale implementation of digital ruble. That's CBDC, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a couple of months old now, but the CBDCs, they're going everywhere. I haven't heard much about one in New Zealand. I think they're doing one. I think they're trialing one.
Yeah, they're kind of softening us up for it.
But basically everywhere, you know, like well over 130 of the 197 nations of the world are working on one of those. The interesting thing on that is going to be interoperability, which is basically another loophole. Various banks and nations around the world are working on making central bank digital currencies interoperable, meaning they seamlessly move over borders and so on. But as I argued in one of my articles about this a long time ago, if every single country on the world has their own digital currency and they're all interoperable, is that much different from having one single digital currency?
No, I would say not.
And that's the thing, because of course a lot of people like Off-Guardian and other people who cover this would argue that central bank digital currency is a stepping stone to a global government.
Yeah, I agree.
Of course, the response will be, well, no, it's not, because we don't have one. We've got like 197 of them and they're all different. It's just they're all networked and they all work the same and they're all the same rules, but they're all different, definitely.
Yeah, well, if you're going to execute a dastardly plan, let's say for one world global government, and you needed to have a one world currency, that's the way to sell it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But Russia, what does that mean, Russia? What does that tell us about Russia? The part of it all.
Oh, I think that's been clear basically since COVID. The dividing lines between like the East and West vanished during COVID. Iran was all over COVID, China. Nobody stepped out of line except a couple of African nations, and their president suddenly died and then they stepped back into line.
Just a coincidence, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that even enemies were in together with the COVID mission. Even enemies, I'm thinking Iran, Israel, you know. So are they really enemies?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's an interesting question. Ian Davis, who I don't know if you've talked to, I think you have.
Rings a bell.
He's a good guy. He's a good metaphor for it. He's vice presidents working at the same company are all working to make profit for that company, even if they don't get along. You know, they're trying to, you know, screw each other over for the better jobs and the better promotions internally, but they're still part of the same management structure. And I think that's a good way of looking at it. I don't think that, you know, the president of Iran and the president of Israel would sit down and have a coffee together and think everything's great. But I also think they have unquestioned like alignment towards a similar world structure.
Yeah.
And that can be sold, as we were talking about with the crops being sold to different politicians in different methods. Some people you just buy, some people you persuade with like ideology, some people you persuade through efficiency. Global government can be sold to different people in different ways. And I think part of the way you would get Iran and you would get America and you would get China on board with it, and I think pretty sure this is what happened, is the message to them would be, look, for the last 20 or so years since the fall of the Berlin Wall, America has been running the world. America has been absolutely country number one, no question. And that has put people like Russia, like Iran, and like China in crosshairs of America's military machine. And that, we've come close to some bad wars on that, and up until Ukraine, which was in 2014, which was like the big near miss. there was, you know, there was some actual conflict, some big time actual conflict potential there. But then you say, if we change this system, if you get on board with a more global system, America's dominance ceases and you get a seat at the table and we can sort all of this out without needing to blow each other up. And the whole mad thing, you know, mutual discretion, that's no longer a question. And we can, you know, yes, it's not going to be great for civil rights. Yes, it's not going to be great for individual liberty, but it's better than a world-ending nuclear war as great powers clash. There won't be any more great powers. There'll simply be one global power. And I think that would get a lot of people on board. That kind of messaging would be done internally. And I think that was done in China. And I'm positive it was done in Russia. And that is why they come to the COVID table. I think that's what COVID was for. COVID was the transition. They basically called it that.
Ah, fascinating. Okay. Then we should be able to work out the obvious steps from that, and currency is going to be one.
Currency will absolutely be one.
Time is coming up against us, Kid. I want to get to this before we're done because it's really interesting to get your view on this. A lot of people have been energized by RFK joining the Trump campaign. There's Tulsi Gabbard also has joined that campaign. Kamala's had her first TV interview, heavily edited, we were told. How are you seeing this presidential campaign, Kit?
Hard to pick, honestly. I was surprised by how hard to pick it is. Like, it was evident months out that Keir Starmer was going to win the UK election. I mean, it was barely an election. It was the Conservatives weren't even trying. It was evident in 2020 that Biden was going to win. No question. The way they set it up, the way they said all the messaging for months beforehand, saying it's going to look like Trump won, but then Biden's going to win the last second. That's what the polls are saying. It was obvious Biden was going to win. I don't know what direction they're going to go with this one. It's not like Hillary Trump 2016, where the plan was for Hillary to win. No question. Hillary had already won. If you go back and read and watch interviews with people,
yeah,
Hillary was going to win. And then there was a last minute change. I don't know if it was to do with her health, or to do with her mental acuity or something, but something changed in like late September, October. And that's why it felt so rushed and strange that Trump did win. I think rather this time, they're giving both sides the potential to win. And they will decide later in the piece, or maybe they're just playing it out like a TV, so, you know, trying to keep it as tense as possible. But I honestly can't pick who's going to win. Every time I see, like, the way the press talks about Kamala, I think they must let her win, right? This is where this is going. But then you actually listen to her talk, and you think they can't possibly let her win.
Yeah.
She's a moron.
Right.
I mean, I honestly think she drinks. I mean,
a lot of people are saying that.
A complete
a lot of people are saying that.
But then you have Trump. And Trump, I mean, they've done Trump before. They're giving him enough fuel to win this time. They're not shutting him down like they did in 2020. So I don't know. I think they might play it depending on, like, reacting to people. You know, I think it's going to be like playing the crowd sort of situation.
Yeah, focus group.
Like, who do you think
focus is... Focus group stuff.
Yeah. Very, very late in the piece, like, how do we handle this? And indeed, responding to other narratives, like the state of the world, like, who do we want to insert into this drama right now? Who do we want to be? I'm leaning, like, 51-49 Trump at the moment, but it is very much a coin toss for me.
Yeah,
RFK is an interesting one because it could be argued he discredits Trump because of the whole vaccine stuff. But then he's a Kennedy, so he does lend him some, you know, bona fide simply by being there. It's a difficult call to make, and I'm interested, if not like especially excited.
And let's end on this. Back in your neck of the woods, two-tier Kia, is he ushering in some kind of great reset? Seems like some kind of reset's happening.
He's just doing what they did before. He's got the glow of the new government at the moment.
Really, so a glow?
People who are interested.
Doesn't seem like much of a.
Well, you know what I mean.
Okay.
Like the press, they're talking about. There was a junior doctor's strike here, And Labour negotiated a settlement to that within a week of coming into power. And there was a train driver strike, and they did that as well. You know, it's sort of like a very small scale version of Reagan and the Iran hostages back in 80.
Yeah.
They do this a lot. They set up things for new governments to solve. And so there's been like an illusion of change in that solved a few problems that didn't need to exist. And there is the two-tier care thing, which I actually don't hold with. I mean, yes, there's two tiers, absolutely. There's them and there's us. He's like, and the idea that he's sentencing like left-wing or right-wing rioters differently is there to annoy and inflame left-wing rioters to disagree with each other rather than him, if you see what I mean. Yep. Like, the system that they're going to be putting in place is not going for one side to the other.
No, it's better to have everyone at each other. Is that right?
And that is distracting from a very punishing budget that's going to be coming in October that's going to...
Oh, how punishing do you think?
Oh, who can say? I mean, they're already saying before they release it, oh, it's going to be punishing, which means either it's going to be really, really punishing or it's going to be really, really, really punishing. They're scrapping like winter fuel allowances to pensioners and stuff. At the same time, sending $40 billion to Ukraine, £40 billion to Ukraine. So it's going to be bad. And a lot of the whole, like, look at me, I cracked down on the far right thing is to protect him from the backlash to his budget, which will come next month.
Okay, that's interesting to know. And it's going to be winter as well. So it'll be like a winter of discontent, will it?
Another one, yeah.
Another one. Oh, dear. Oh, well, it's always great to catch up with you, Kit, editor of Off Guardian, Kit Knightley, for our monthly or thereabouts chat. Thank you for coming on again, Kit. I'll keep an eye on Off Guardian. I'd like to go in there quite regularly now, you'll be pleased to know, just to keep up with things.
While you can.
While we can. Yeah, oh, gosh, I wish you didn't say that. And we'll talk again in about a month, Kit. Thank you.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.